is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. Jay, tonight we are going to talk a little early season reaction to the first week or so of the NBA season. Let's start with one of our favorite topics, Markelle Fultz.
My goodness, he looks like a functional NBA player.
He does. He really does. It's amazing that, you know, he obviously is not at the point where he's producing like a number one overall draft pick, and he may never get there. But just the fact that he's out on the floor and he actually looks confident. He looks like a guy who belongs out there. He doesn't look like someone who's afraid. We talked about it a little bit in our our preseason podcast predictions, that one of the things about him is, was he going to be confident enough to go out there and play, and was he going to be afraid to drive into the basket and take it to the hole and get fouled and have to go to the free throw line? That doesn't appear like it's affecting him right now. And I'd have to say, if you're Orlando at this point, you have to feel pretty good about the Fultz signing and what you may potentially have in the future. Because if he keeps figuring it out, and he gets more and more confident, and he can put the problems that he's had behind him, it's obvious that the physical tools are still there. You saw the one steal that he had against the Cavs, where they kind of let him dunk it. It was more like a dunk contest dunk, but still, it was a pretty impressive play for a guy who's played very little NBA basketball. And then you just look at the totality of what he's done, which now he's played 36, 37 games in the league. And, you know, I think he's going to be good. I think Orlando is going to be very, very happy that they took a flyer on him. And, you know, maybe he's still mentally fragile. Maybe this could all go away in the blink of an eye. But certainly if you're Orlando at this point, you have to be encouraged with what you've seen from him so far.
Now, I want to take umbrage with one thing you said, Mike. You said he's never going to produce at something at a number one pick. Hey, we had Anthony Bennett on our team, Mike. He's out producing Anthony Bennett for sure, right?
Okay, well he is, but
I'm really just joking around here. I'm excited to see what he does. I don't know. Who knows what his ceiling is at this point? One thing I will say is, I did think that, you know, he definitely looked like he knew what he was doing when he was on the floor, and obviously we got to see it firsthand because he played the Cavs for the first game. But, you know, he could be really, really big for them, you know, and I'm not saying that he's going to be someone that's going to throw them over the top, but he could be a key piece and a contender down the line for Orlando, because I really do think Orlando has a chance to do something in the next 2 years. I really think they do. Obviously, I think they're still one, two pieces away from really being a contender, but I think they've built something that could possibly lead to something really good in the future.
I mean, they got some interesting pieces, and if Fultz ends up being one of their five best players, then I think that's a huge win. He's averaging, I'm looking at his stats right now, so he's averaging 12 points a game, 2 rebounds, 5 assists. So yeah, he's off to a very good start, considering that if you're a Philly fan, you're looking at it going, this guy produced next to nothing for us over the first 2 years of his career. And now it seems like he's at the very least going to be a functional rotation player for a pretty good team that's going to be battling for a playoff spot. So that's a pretty good place for Fultz to be.
Speaking for off to a good start, Mike, it's 14-2 Memphis. We're taping this right now. Memphis is playing the Lakers. They started off 14-2 in the first 2.5 minutes, and we've already had the Anthony Davis wins cam at probably 5 or 6, Mike. I'm predicting he plays less than 20 minutes in this game. Do you want to take the over or the under on that?
I don't know. You were saying before we started here that there was a chance that he wasn't going to play
at all. He didn't show up on the injury report at all, Mike, not at all. And then miraculously in Vogel's press conference, like 2.5 hours before the game tonight, he said, he's experiencing a little shoulder discomfort. We're going to work him out before game and see how it goes. And
do you think that they still have to sort of make up fake injuries when they're resting these guys, or is the league accepting the fact that people are sitting out regardless of?
I don't know what that whole thing is, but I mean, he had KT banned on his, those new things that seem to be, Tiger wears it on the back of his neck when he's golfing now and things like that. But he had a KT band on his shoulder. And I mean, I don't understand what they're doing, because the first three possessions of the game, he's shooting a mid-range jumper, a three-pointer, and another mid-range jumper. If his shoulder's bothering him, why the heck is he shooting these shots? Maybe, and he's obviously in discomfort, because, like, I'm not lying to you. When I said the discomfort cam, they literally were on his, like, panning to his face, and he's wincing and like flexing his shoulder. Like, why would you do this? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Who knows? It's hard to figure out exactly what any of these teams are doing in terms of what's the right thing as far as load management. And in the West, these games are all important. And you can look at it and say, oh, this game's a throwaway. They're going to beat Memphis. Memphis is supposed to be terrible. But who knows? You know, those wins, especially against bottom feeder teams, are wins that you want to put in the right column. You don't want to put that in the L column when it comes down to the end of the season, and seedings are going to be so important. So I don't know. I mean, let's face it. With LeBron and Anthony Davis, if they're both healthy, they're going to be very, very good. They struggled that first night against the Clippers, and then they've won a couple in a row. I think one of the big questions that we kind of put down here on our discussion point list was LeBron long-term at the point. And I just think that he's going to get worn down if he keeps playing point guard for the rest of the season, having to bring the ball up the floor. Because I got to believe that as teams see that more, they're going to start picking him up full court and just – not that he can't bring the ball up the court against full court pressure, but just it's one more thing that's going to wear him down and make it more difficult for him to be at his best when he's really needed, which is going to be next year or, next spring in the playoffs. So I don't know. I think they got to figure out what they're going to do at point. Obviously, Rondo hasn't played, and so we bring Rondo back in, and maybe that alleviates the pressure off LeBron. But we all know Rondo's limitations at this point in his career. He's not going to shoot the ball very well or very often, and defensively he's not nearly the player he was during his Celtics time. So I don't know if LeBron at the point is a long-term solution that LA can really bank on without wearing LeBron down. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think he's gonna get worn down playing at the point.
I think long-term viability, I think a lot of things comes down to when is Rondo, like you said Rondo's not going to be like super you can't rely on him to do great things that he did when he was playing for the Celtics. But at the same time, like, I think if he comes back and is at least functional, that they don't put LeBron at the point all the time. And even tonight I'm watching, and Bradley's bringing the ball up a lot more than LeBron is right now, which is bizarre.
But you can still run the offense through LeBron. He just doesn't have to expend all that energy bringing the ball up the floor if teams are pressuring him. He just pops out to the wing or comes up and gets a handoff or whatever, and then the offense goes from there with him in charge of it, which is sort of the way he's always played, where occasionally he's the point guard, but more often he gets down the floor and then gets the ball in the half court and then directs things from there. I think it'll be interesting to see, too, as the season goes on, whether or not he decides to go down into the post and play at all. You know, he had those couple years in Miami where he played a lot in the post and really just took advantage of guys, and especially as he starts to – his athleticism starts to decline slightly, which I think it has. I think just his size and bulk and ability to just overpower people down in the post is something that he should definitely look at. I've probably been arguing for that for 15 years to not much avail, at least while he was here in Cleveland. But I think if he can somehow do that or decides that he wants to do that, I think that's going to be something that the Lakers should look at as well. And who knows? They may never do that because LeBron may not want to do it. But I think that if they could, I think that would be something where they definitely would have an advantage if you could post up LeBron, almost do the inside out with Davis on the outside and LeBron on the inside.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think that they could potentially – that's a wrinkle that they throw in the playoffs, you know. And they save it for the playoffs and save the wear and tear on LeBron posting up on his body. Now, obviously, he's getting wear and tear bringing the ball up the floor, and they're pressuring him. And Jay Crowder's literally hounding him up the floor, even if he's not got the ball. It's pretty funny.
It's just a different kind of wear and tear.
Yeah,
you know, if you're banging bodies down in the low post, or you're having to go full speed end to end all the time with a guy bumping you and staying up on you as the point guard. So,
speaking of the Lakers, what do you think of the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope stat lines? Have you been seeing those?
I don't know what his stat lines have been. Oh, so
It's been pretty terrible. Hold on, I'm gonna pull it up, but I'm pretty sure he played like. Between the first two games, he played like 27 minutes and was like 0-for-11. He scored 1 point on a free throw, and he'd played like.
This way. He's a very average player at best. If you could get average production out of him, you'd be very, very happy if you're the Lakers. But I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we're waiting for Kuzma to come back, and it sounds like. He should be back on the road trip that's coming up from what I read today. And he's not
like the
linchpin, but I think it'll definitely open things up for LeBron and Anthony Davis even more to have him out on the floor, because he can at least be a functional scorer.
For sure. All right, let's talk a couple other Western Conference teams. So one of the things that I've been thinking about here as I look back on our preseason prediction show, and I made the unfortunate call that I thought Sacramento was going to make the playoffs, and they're 0-4. Bagley's out with a thumb injury for 6 weeks. They have just looked abysmal, just absolutely abysmal. And there's a lot of talk that I've been reading online about how Luke Walton is a serious downgrade to Dave Yeager. And it's clear that Yeager was a good coach, is a good coach. Seems like he sometimes has problems with front offices and getting along with people in that respect. But as far as coaching on the floor, it just seems like Sacramento at this point is pretty lost. And it's got to be, if you're a Sacramento fan, it's got to be super disappointing to have gone into the season with high hopes, and now you're 0-4, and one of your two linchpin players moving forward is out for 6 weeks. Going 0-4, I mean, if they don't right the ship pretty darn quick, they're going to be out of it before they can even turn around, and that's kind of surprising to me, because I really thought they were ready.
When do the calls for Luke Walton's head start to come? I mean, this team. I mean, I know it's early in his career. Oh my God, what did Dwight Howard do to his hair, Mike? Did you see this?
No.
He looks like a King Koopa with his spikes and blonde hair. Oh my God, I'm sorry. Anyways, I just don't understand what positive you could see from Luke Walton. Yeah, he did really well with Golden State's roster. He went to the Lakers and was terrible, and that wasn't a fit. And now he's in Sacramento. I just don't know. When do you start saying, well, maybe he's a good assistant, but not he's not a good coach? And
I'm not sure he's a good coach. I'm really not.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like Jaeger had a team who wasn't expected to make the playoffs last year, competing for the playoffs, and now here we are, three or four games into the season, and they've just looked abysmal. Like, and you couldn't have imagined this kind of start for them. I would have think.
No, I mean, Buddy Hield's averaging 14 a game after last year he put up over 20.
But they paid him lots of money.
Paid him lots of money, which you hope isn't directly related to it. Everything that you read about Buddy Hield is that he's a guy who busts his butt and is a hard worker, so maybe it's just four games. He's not played up to the way that he wants to be playing. But, man, I just – whew, it's rough. It's rough there. So I don't know what's going on. And then, conversely, the Phoenix Suns, who everybody, including us, kind of left for dead as clearly the worst team in the Western Conference, has looked relatively frisky without – other than the very first game, DeAndre Ayton, who goes out for 25 games with the diuretic suspension.
Yeah, what is he taking a diuretic for, Mike?
I have no idea. I mean, you got to believe that there's something else going on, but who knows? I don't know. I don't want to speculate on that. But I mean, clearly,
I had. I'll be honest with you. I had to ask Molly, like, what would you take a diuretic for? Like, what's the purpose of that? Like, it makes you pee.
Right.
That just makes me think you're doing something you shouldn't be doing in order to take – like, it just doesn't make any sense that – have you heard of an NBA player ever get suspended for a diuretic before?
No, but very few NBA players have gotten suspended at all. So I think there's been like four or five marginal guys that over the course of the last 5 to 10 years have been suspended for drug use. So I don't know. It's a shame, but – I'm guessing that whatever happened, and hopefully it'll, you know, he'll clear himself up and not get involved with that anymore. But Phoenix has looked relatively good. Booker has been solid, and they actually have some guys that are competent. I know Rubio didn't play the last game, but he's made a difference, I think. And it seems like maybe their coach, Monty Williams, has come in and made a difference and just injected a new, different attitude. And it'll be interesting to see if Phoenix can keep it up, because I think there's, you know, you and I talked at one point and I said I think Phoenix has more top line talent than the Cavs, and you could debate that probably, but I think Booker, and if Ayton, when he's around, you know, Ayton was the former number one pick and Booker's clearly a guy who is very, very good. So I think Phoenix could potentially get themselves out of the basement of the West, although four games is a very small sample size, so it remains to be seen.
Yeah, and then, you know, at the same time, another team we thought was going to do well, New Orleans. I mean, obviously, you know, Zion not being there is really hurting them right now, and the whole anticipation of them playing. And to be honest with you, they've really been in every game, I feel.
Yeah, they have. They haven't been as bad as the record indicates, and they're also missing Jrue Holiday too. So with Holiday out and with Zion out, those were two key guys that they were clearly counting on. Jrue Holiday's a borderline all-star, and we all know what we thought Zion was going to be. The revelation has been, shout out to our boy Christopher Dotson from the Protect the Nest podcast, Brandon Ingram averaging 27, 9, and 5. Right now, that's a pretty good stat line. Now, it hasn't translated to winning yet, but and Lonzo, I think, is averaging like 12 and 6 and 7, so he's been okay. Lonzo really hasn't taken that leap in the first four games, but it looks like maybe Ingram has figured some things out and get him out of the shadow of LeBron, and as he continues to mature and get better and figure out what kind of player he's going to be, he's been really, really good. So I think the Pelicans, despite the fact that they're, I feel better about their 0-4 than I feel about Sacramento.
I will say, Mike, I'm looking at Pelican's schedule over the next 10 games. All right, you ready?
Yep.
Denver, the Thunder, who, by the way, the Thunder has looked competent despite the fact that their complete roster change.
Yeah, they
look,
I agree.
They look competent. Brooklyn, which who knows where what way the wind blows with the Kyrie that week. Toronto. And then the game that I feel the best about is Charlotte. Then they go Houston, Clippers, Miami, Golden State, Portland. That's their next 10, Mike. Do they walk away with two wins at that point after all that? Like,
I mean, it's certainly possible. I mean, it's certainly possible. That's a tough road to hoe there for the Pelicans.
And they've got like the third most national TV games too, by the way. So.
Okay, but the reality is, that you could pull up pretty much any Western Conference team's schedule and go through and be like, ooh, that schedule looks rough.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm just saying, like, right now, with the way that they're playing, like,
no, I agree with you. But
there's a chance they're going to be 2-12 at that point.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. They're going to need, you know, they're going to need Drew Holiday to get back, and they need Zion to get back, and they're getting good production out of some of the guys that they have playing. Josh Hart's putting up like 16 a game, so he's been playing pretty well. They just don't have all the pieces that they thought that they were going to have. And to your point, they've been in games. They've had a chance to, you know, they've had a chance to win some of the games that they've played. So I think they're going to be okay. Now, that okay may not translate to a playoff spot, especially not without Zion, but I think they're not going to end up as the worst team in the West. They're not going to end up way down at the bottom. I wouldn't think. I think they have too many good players for that to happen. So,
All right.
Next, let's go to another. Let's just stay in the Western Conference and buzz through the Minnesota Timberwolves undefeated. Karl Anthony Towns.
I've watched 0 minutes of Minnesota Timberwolves basketball this season.
Well, I probably have. I go back to my Nikola Jokic comment from last year. I haven't watched a whole lot of Karl Anthony Towns basketball, but I've read plenty of things about Karl Anthony Towns and just kind of how people feel about him being lost on defense, and is he a guy who just puts up stats on bad teams. But it seems like now that he's sort of taken the mantle of the leadership role there on that team, that maybe he's ready to take that next step forward and really start to impact winning. So his
how about Wiggins, Mike?
Yeah, Wiggins is averaging 20 a game. He's up to 6 rebounds, which I know if he got to that for the end of his, you know, at the end of the season, that would clearly be a career high. He still averages Wiggins. Wiggins' big problem is he averages less than right now. He's averaging 0.7 assists per game, and that's really where he struggles. He's just not a guy who playmakes in any way, shape, or form for anybody else, and that's what makes him limited as a player. He's strictly a scorer, and he scores, at least in the past, he scored inefficiently. So he's been better, though. He's clearly been better, and Towns has just been fantastic. He's averaging 32, 13, and 5, 3 steals, 2 blocks. He's been really, really good, and if he continues to be that good, who knows? It's just like we said a second ago with the Pelicans. You can read off any one of these teams' schedules in the West, and if they're playing mostly Western Conference teams, I mean, it's just, I mean, there's no easy games. There's not one game that you're looking at it going, oh, that's a for sure win. We're going to go in and coast. I mean, all these teams are good. Yep. So with the exception maybe of the Warriors.
Oh, when we talked and we talked about their offense or their defense being abysmal, the fact that they gave up 140 points, I think, twice now already. Woof.
We didn't know it was going to be that bad. Although the honest truth is, if you look at their roster, I mean, their roster is just, I mean, there's so many unproven guys, and you just, I mean, there's just, you don't know what do they do? I mean,
did you see the tweet? I retweeted it. Did you see the tweet that someone wrote? Everyone, all the LeBron fans that have been wondering for years what it would look like for Steph Curry to carry 4 Jamario Moons to the NBA playoffs. now is the chance to see. And well, Jamario Moon retweeted it. Hey, man, I had a good season or two.
Well, I read something. I can't remember if it was Twitter or where I saw it, but just something to that same effect that, you know, maybe at this point Curry's not really ready to – you know, carry the load of this roster. Like right now, Steph's shooting 26% from 3, which...
And he's only averaging 24 a game, which we thought he was going to score like 40 a game.
Right. I mean, I thought he was going to... We clearly thought, I mean, I thought he was going to average well over 30. And he's going to have... I mean, it's proven here that he's going to have to if they're going to have any... I just don't know how they score. I mean, I'm looking at their stats right now. So Steph's at 24, D'Angelo Russell's averaging 16. Then you have Draymond at 12. Then, honestly, the next two or three guys, I could walk by him in an airport and not even know who they are. Damian Lee, I have no idea who that is. Eric Pascal, no idea. Then Glenn Robinson III, okay, I've heard of him. Omari Spellman, he's a Cleveland guy, I've heard of him. Then we get down to Marquise Chris, former Cavalier and number 8 overall pick with the Suns, who hasn't panned out. But when you're playing Marquise Chris 15 minutes a game and you think you're going to be a good team, that doesn't bode well for you. So it's I can honestly say it's somewhat enjoyable to see the Warriors down. I'm enjoying that.
Hey, listen, the Cavs got a victory before the Warriors, Mike.
That's true. That is true. So that was a good victory for the Cavs. I don't know if we want to talk Cavs.
Yeah,
so we can go
to the Cavs. I have to say, right, I am encouraged, Mike. I don't know how much of the games you've watched, but I watched a majority of the game last night. It kind of got out of hand. But they didn't fight. They didn't give up last night, which I really liked. That I saw, you know, obviously they were undersized, undermatched to play Milwaukee and stop Giannis. They played tough. They're up after the first quarter. They're down 6 or 7 at halftime. So you can't be too upset about that. And then, you know, it got ugly at the beginning of the third quarter, but they fought back. And there was a point in the fourth quarter, Mike, that it was like a minute or 2 minutes into the fourth quarter, we were only down 5 points. So, like, you can't be mad at the effort. And that's the one thing I will say is they're trying, and they're trying more than I felt like they tried a lot last season. And that's something that I really am encouraged by. And I think I was talking to my friend last night, and I really think it is to do with the fact that Beilein has kind of created a culture. It seems to be a strong culture of, you know, he just knows how to talk to young guys, and our roster is young. There's no doubt about it. He just knows what he's doing. And I think if he was a coach of a team with a bunch of vets, I don't know that his methods and way that he would go about things would translate. But because these guys are young, the buy-in is there. And the one person that I think has really bought in the most, Mike, is Kevin Love. I see it, and I'm encouraged that this is going to be headed in the right direction. I'm not saying that we're going to playoffs this year or anything, but I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing, and I know it's early, and it's, you know, who knows what's actually going to happen, but everything looks like the culture's there, and they want to compete, and they're competing, and they're not giving up, and they're actually running an offense, and their defense, I mean, I don't know where they are standing now, but going into last night's game, we were like a top 10 defensive rated team. Like, who would have thought that at the beginning of the year? I mean, I know it's a small sample size, but I'm just saying, like, I'm encouraged.
Yeah, I think you have reason to be encouraged. I think a couple things. One, if you watch this team play and you watch their player movement and their ball movement and just the things that they're doing offensively, I think it speaks to the fact that they have bought into Beilein's system. And that's always the worry when you bring in a college guy into a pro environment, that the methods and ways of interacting with players and offensive systems and defensive systems that they have just aren't going to be compatible with pro players. And it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like the players have bought into what Beilein's trying to sell, and you see them moving the ball, you see them playing together, you see a lot of enthusiasm from the bench. So that speaks to what you talked about with the culture that Beilein's been able to set. And it seems like that's going in a positive direction. Now, if you look at the Cavs' individual players. So Tristan, if he continues the stat line that he has now, he might make his first All-Star team. He's averaging 19 and 12, and he's been really good. This might be the best three games.
Hey, the Kardashian curse, Mike. It's lifted.
It's lifted. But, I mean, honestly, offensively, this might be the best I've ever seen him look over the course of three games. So encouraging, but we know that he's going to come back to earth at least to some degree. Tristan's been a very weird player throughout his career, and he's been so up and so down, and you don't know what you're getting from. It's not even like game to game, or it's like season to season.
Did you see my tweet? Tristan Thompson career 3-pointers 1, Ben Simmons career 3-pointers 0.
Well, hey, Tristan's got up on. Hey, they both have to change hands while they're shooting, right? We got to get Ben Simmons with Dave Love.
Yeah.
All right. So Love, I agree. Kevin Love has been great. He's averaging 15 and 15 with almost 5 assists. But it's not surprising. I think all of us know that when Kevin Love is healthy, that he's a productive player in this league, which is why, from the Cavs' perspective, if you keep him healthy through the All-Star break and through the trading deadline, then you see what's out there for the Cavs to probably try to pick up him through a trade. Now, maybe they want to keep him. Maybe they're saying this guy is a veteran presence that fits in with what we're trying to do, and they don't deal him. And I don't think they'll deal him just for nothing, but I think there's certainly, if he's healthy and as productive as he's been so far, I think they're certainly going to explore the possibility of what they could get for him in a trade. But he's been really good. I think Garland, although he's been, he's been okay. He hasn't been lights out. Like you're
his
like,
defense
oh my
gosh. Needs some work, Mike.
Yeah,
his defense.
Like you're like, oh my gosh, this guy is amazing. I haven't felt like that at all. But I also think that he's proven himself over the first three games that he's clearly going to be a guy who's going to be, he's going to be a good player in this league. Now, how good, fourth pick overall good, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. And then I guess then there's two other guys I want to touch on quickly. Sexton, he is what he is. He's averaging 2 assists a game.
You see, you picked up his third year of his contract today.
Yeah. It's still alarming to me that a guy who's a 6'2 point guard is only averaging 2 assists a game. It worries me a little going forward long term. I'm just not sure that either Garland or Sexton are really point guards. And now you're talking about having 2 6'2 shooting guards. I like how hard Sexton plays. I think he's working harder on defense. But this team's going to need somebody in the backcourt that can play make. And then the guy who's, I think, had the worst start to the season is Chetty. He's been terrible.
I don't know. I he's had flashes. Yesterday he looked good, at least in the first quarter. I mean, I guess nothing stands out to me after that. I mean, he got a contract extension too, Mike.
No, I know, and that was a good contract extension from the Cavs' perspective and for his, because I think he probably hasn't performed up to the level of that contract, but I think he certainly has the ability to outperform it moving forward, which is kind of where you want to be if you're both the player and the team. So I think it was a good signing by the Cavs, but I've been a little disappointed in Chetty because I think if the Cavs are going to really be, and again, good is the wrong way to say it, but I think if their team is going to maximize what their team can be, he's got to be a little bit better. So I don't know. It's good. I think the encouraging thing about these first three games is it looks like it's going to be a season where the team is going to be competitive as long as Love and Thompson stay healthy. And it appears that all these guys, you know, Kevin Porter's playing 18 minutes a game, so that's good to see. He's getting some minutes. Garland and Sexton are obviously both going to play lots of minutes. So that's really what you want. You want these young guys developing. You want them to play competitive basketball, and then you just see what happens as we move go down the line.
Question for you. Did you watch most of the Indiana game, or did you?
I did. I watched most of it.
So I'll be honest with you. I was in Michigan and I was kind of split screening between Tiger playing golf and
the Cavs. How come he only took 3 shots the whole game, Chetty?
Like 3 shots?
I just don't think he's very aggressive. I just think he tends to float out there, and sometimes you watch him and you're like, man, what's he doing? And he just wasn't aggressive when he got the ball. He didn't really look to shoot. He didn't really look to create much for his teammates, which is, I think, why I'm saying that I feel like he's been disappointing. So,
okay. All right. I didn't really realize that he only took 3 shots until just now. So when I was looking at the box score here. But do you know who takes a lot of shots, Mike?
Who takes a lot of shots?
Jordan Clarkson.
He loves to shoot.
Listen, he came into the game yesterday, I'm pretty sure. In like the first possession he was in the game.
Here's what I will say. He's right now, he's currently averaging almost 1 assist per game more than Andrew Wiggins. So he's got that going for him.
That's true. All right.
All right, Eastern teams. Just a couple teams to touch on. Philly's been everything that we expected. They're going to be really, really good. Their defense is just stifling. I think teams are going to have a hard time scoring on them. I think they're going to end up, again, just like we said, right at the top. Milwaukee, same thing. I mean, I haven't seen anything that would lead me to believe that those two teams aren't going to be the two teams in the East that are going to end up at the top. But there are two surprising teams, at least to me. I think how good the Raptors have looked has been surprising. Siakam has seemingly taken over the Kawhi role. He's averaging close to 30. He's almost at the Brandon Ingram stat line. He might even be averaging a couple more points than Ingram. I think he's might be at 29, 9, and 5. So he's been really good. So I've been surprised with how well Toronto's played. The Trae Young Hawks, before Trae got hurt tonight in the first half, only played 11 minutes, but the first couple games there, he looked fantastic. And, you know, I'm not sure. I'm still not sure exactly what the Hawks are long-term in terms of this season. But if he played the way that he played, and or even came 75% of what he played in the first couple games, he would have been an all-star.
And I will say,
and
Hunter looks serviceable, Mike, so far. He looks, I mean, he's not.
He looks service, right. He's serviceable.
He's kind of, in my opinion, he's kind of right now in the same position that Garland's in. Like, he's not wowing me with anything he's doing, but he's at least, like, being.
He's kind of what we thought he was going to be.
Yeah.
He's going to be a good player. He's going to be a solid player. He's going to be a guy who is going to be in the rotation or can be on the rotation on a good team because he's a good defender. And he's not going to try to do too much. But if you look at his stat line, which I'm looking at right now, so he's averaging 11 points a game. He's averaging almost 5 rebounds. And then he's in the Andrew Wiggins 0.7 assists per game club. So he's not dynamic. He's not a playmaker. He's not going to create for other people. But if he's your fourth best player or your fifth best player, sure. I mean, he's going to be a classic 3-and-D guy who's not going to be a dynamic playmaker barring some unforeseen development in his game, but he's going to play in the league for 10 years. There's no question about that.
Yep. And then I have to say I've been Jabari Parker is having a decent start to the year, almost averaging 11.5 points per game. So I'm pretty...
Yeah, Jabari's been...
You know, he's not as long as he doesn't functional and he doesn't get injured. That's what his goal should be.
And he's not a passer either. He's averaging even less assists than DeAndre. He's at 0.3. So Jabari's not looking to give it up and create for others.
Well, here you go. But here you go. Vince Carter, who's not even playing more. He's not playing more than like 10 minutes a game.
Is averaging more assists than both those guys.
Yeah. So I mean, neither one of those guys are going to be dynamic playmakers. Jabari's never been known for that, and we kind of felt that way about Hunter coming in. I think what's been interesting is how many minutes Reddish has played and really hasn't played well, but he's playing almost 24 minutes a game and he's only averaging 4 points a game. He's also shooting terribly. Yeah, he's shooting pretty poorly. What's he shooting from the field?
21.9% from the field.
Yeah, so, but the fact that they're starting him and playing him 24 minutes means that they must see something in practice. They must have saw something during training camp that led them to believe that he was going to be able to be a productive player. Maybe he's just, you know, had a couple games out of the gate where he's not shooting the ball well or he's getting used to the speed of the NBA game. So I guess if I'm an Atlanta fan, I'm at least encouraged that the coaching staff feels like he needs to be out there on the floor developing, which is what you want with a young team. You want a guy who has the talent that Reddish has to get minutes. You don't want that guy floundering on the bench for the whole season.
All right, so from one Duke player to another, Mike, it's your time of day. It's time to eat some crow. Mr. RJ Barrett, what have you seen so far with him?
All right, so Barrett's been really good. His stats are really, really good, and he's looked like a guy who knows how to play much more than I probably would have thought heading into it. Now, all that being said, you're still on a team that is not going anywhere, is not going to win very much this year. And as a result of that, I'm not sure what the habits are that he's going to build. But he's filling the stat sheet. Unlike DeAndre Hunter, unlike Cam Reddish, unlike Andrew Wiggins, he's a guy who he's already averaging 20. He's averaging almost 8 rebounds. And He's sharing the ball, 3.3 assists.
Hey, Mike.
People knew he had all these skills. I just, my worry, my concern was and is, how does he fit into a winning team? And it remains to be seen. I'm not going to figure that out this year, but clearly Barrett's not going to be, I mean, he's going to be a good player.
So you're telling me he's not going to learn good habits from Dennis Smith Jr., who storms out of practices, or Bobby Portis, who punches teammates in the face? Come on, Mike. Come on.
Well, Dennis Smith Jr., he didn't play. He wasn't even in the box score when I looked. I think they played last night. I didn't even see his name in the box score.
Although he's averaging like, 1 point per game.
He didn't play because the Knicks have played four games and Dennis Smith only played in three of them. So that guy has just fallen off. I mean, he's fallen off the map.
He's good at dunking, though.
He is good at dunking.
Maybe RJ Barrett can learn hairstyles from Elfrid Payton, though.
There you go. Get the awning look going. I just good for Barrett. I mean, I'm glad. The league's better when these guys that come in as rookies are good players. And if you're a Knicks fan, which, you know, I wouldn't want to wish on anybody, but Barrett clearly has got to be somebody that you got to feel good about. That hey, we made a good selection here. This guy at least has the potential to be somebody that we can build around as a cornerstone piece. Even if he ends up not being a transcendent superstar, guys who put up 25-7 or 27-3 as rookies generally tend to have pretty solid careers, unless you're Tyreek Evans. So
yeah.
So we've talked about some of the rookies. The only one we haven't touched on is Ja Morant, who's looked really, really good for Memphis, and we talked about his playmaking ability. He scored maybe a little bit better and shot it from three a little bit better than we thought. But his passing, I think, and his athleticism continue to be what makes him special. And, you know, he went head-to-head with Kyrie, blocked his shot the other night when the Nets and Grizzlies played. And
he just made a really nice and-one. Dwight Howard, with his spiky hair, fouled him.
Yeah, and Morant is going to be a good player. If I'm a Memphis fan, I'm excited that Morant is going to be a part of my team.
Do you think this is going to be one of the best rookie classes in the last 10 years? I have to think so, right? Like, just and it's hard. I know it's hard to compare rookie classes, but I'm just thinking, like, if Zion turns out to be okay, which I think by all accounts he's going to be fine as long as he's healthy. Just looking from the top, I mean, your top three guys are all looking to be, they're going to be bona fide NBA players, like solid players. And I think, you know, 4, 5, and 6 probably have a chance, although Culver has looked pretty abysmal.
Yeah, Culver's been bad. Yeah, Culver hasn't been good. Let me pull up what he's done. So
he's averaging 2 points a game, I think, Mike.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So I'm kind of... You know, I thought that Culver was the pick for the Cavs, but maybe it's not. Maybe I'm happy.
I was the guy. I was stumped for Culver once the NCAA tournament was over. I really felt like he would be a good fit. So, you know, again, when you're a rookie, there's definitely some learning curves. I mean, he's playing, 14 minutes a game, 2 points, one rebound. He's in the Andrew Wiggins 0.7 assist club. So that's not really where you want to be.
But I'm just thinking, like, there's all these guys. You've got all the guys that we've talked about, and then you've got Hero, who's playing really, really well. We've got that other guy from Miami who played in the G League. What's his name?
Kendrick Nunn, who was averaging, I think he had 14 tonight, but he was averaging 22 a game going into tonight. So he's been really good.
And then you got Thybulle for the 76ers, who... He's not averaging a lot of points, but his defense is just.
Yeah, and he's playing a lot. He's playing a good number of minutes too.
I mean, he's only averaging 3.7 points per game and 2 rebounds and 1 assist, but
he's not really out there to score. He's out there to play defense on the wing, and he's looked really good at that.
You know, so that's what I'm saying. I think this rookie class has a chance to be something, you know, pretty special when it's all said and done. I think. You know, am I saying this is going to be like the LeBron rookie class? I don't know if I'm ready to say that yet, but I still think it's going to be one of the better rookie classes that we've had in the last 5-10 years.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It looks like that at the top, it's going to be pretty, pretty strong. And, yeah, I don't know. I think if you look at the potential of what Zion, if he projects out to be what we all thought he was in the preseason and what we think he can be, he's going to be one of the better players in the league. It looks like Morant has got a chance to be a really, really good point guard, a top-flight point guard, and Barrett is sort of an all-around, all-court player. And like I said, he's been better than what I would have guessed coming in. And
yeah.
If he ends up being able to do what he's doing on a winning team, then you might really have something. So then the last team, they just knocked the Denver Nuggets out from the ranks of the undefeated. Your Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, baby. Dude, you're going to get me all excited over here.
Well, here's the thing. So Dallas beats Denver 109-106. Porzingis, 10 points. Luka, 12 points. They combine to go 7 for 26 from the floor.
And they won.
And Dallas won.
Who scored their points tonight?
So they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys in double figures.
Wow.
Nine guys in double figures. So their bench is surprisingly solid.
Do you know who looks really good? Seth, man. He's playing really good this year.
He is.
Seth Curry. I don't know.
He is. He had 10. So their bench, DeLon Wright, Tim Hardaway Jr., and Jalen Brunson, Maxi Kleber. So their bench is good. And Dallas, you know, you kind of pegged it that you thought they were going to be, you know, you thought they were going to be good. And it certainly looks like.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed I didn't pick them for the playoffs, Mike.
Yeah, I feel like two of my playoff teams, Sacramento and New Orleans, haven't won a game, so that's not looking too good for my.
Well, I think on my end, I think my Portland and Golden State are my two teams that are in danger, or would be in danger. Obviously, it's really early in the season, but I guess the one team who probably don't care if we talk about them or not. How about those San Antonio Spurs, Mike? How can you doubt Greg Popovich? Come out the gate 3-0, and not a single person was talking about them going into the season. Like, and that's probably how Popovich.
Most people did the same thing we did, which was they were speculating, is this the year when they finally drop out of the playoffs? But, you know, I had them not in the playoffs, just not so much because I didn't think highly of them, but just because I felt like the rest of the West was so good. But they just have, again, they have a lot of competent NBA players, and, you know, DeJounte Murray's back. He's putting up 14, almost 8.5 rebounds and 6 assists and playing really good defense. So
yeah, and I think the other thing, too, difference. Is they're working in their favor is they kind of had an easy schedule to start. I mean, they played the Knicks and the Wizards their first two games, and then they played Portland. They beat Portland yesterday, so that's pretty impressive. I think Thursday, Friday is going to be a good test. They play the Clippers on Thursday. They play the Warriors on Friday. You know, let's see what happens. Now, I would expect them to beat the Warriors, but the Clippers, you know, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how they play against a really good team, because they really haven't played a really good team yet.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree.
All right. I'm set. Is there anything
I don't know if there's anything else, but I think we hit on most of the major themes of this early part of the season. So we'll leave it at that. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on our next episode.
As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.